This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. Hope you're well.
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. An interesting confluence of seemingly unrelated events, which for me kind of closes a certain circle. The day before yesterday marked 166 years since Theodor Herzl was born. 2nd of May, 1860. 166 years have gone by since Herzl was born. And of course, Theodor Herzl was the father of modern Zionism, and not only through his book Alt Neuland, but also through his activities in founding the Zionist organization. And interestingly, he was ignited, his enthusiasm for Zionism was ignited by the Dreyfus affair, the Dreyfus trial in France, where a Jewish French soldier was accused and found guilty of spying for Germany. And it turned out that it was all an anti-Semitic plot, that the that the military authorities knew that he wasn't guilty, but nonetheless he was found guilty and he was imprisoned for a period of time. And even when he was exonerated afterwards and reinstated to his position, he never really was recognized. His rank that he was reinstated to was always less than what it was before. And this was a clear case of anti-Semitism using him as a scapegoat because he was Jewish and because society allowed that to happen. And I just wonder what Herzl would think today when he sees how this Zionist concept is being questioned. But one of the quotes that I just wanted to give that came out of Herzl, which I think is so relevant to us, is the following. He said, "It is true that we aspire to our ancient land, but what we want is a new blossoming of the Jewish spirit." And I think that from his position of state in Jerusalem, where he lies on Mount Herzl today, I think that he would be incredibly surprised and proud of what his vision has managed to produce. But the thing that really came together for me was another event that took place yesterday, which was the promotion of one Uriel Dreyfus to the position of lieutenant colonel in the IDF. He's a reserve soldier. He is a judge within the military court, a lawyer, of course, and a judge within the military court. And he was promoted to lieutenant colonel. And he is a direct descendant of the same Alfred Dreyfus who ignited Theodor Herzl's vision about Zionism. And that also happened over the last few days. And I just wonder whether Dreyfus, Uriel Dreyfus, Lieutenant Colonel Uriel Dreyfus, is aware of the fact that it almost coincided with Herzl's birthday, the day that he was born, and the relevance of the connection of those two events and the families and the names, Dreyfus and Herzl, how it came together to produce what we have
today.
That's
incredible.
I think it's an incredible story.
Yeah, amazing, amazing story. Let's talk about President Trump. He's indicated that the latest proposal by Iran to end the war is not acceptable to him. What does this mean now for this conflict?
Well, I think there are a few things that I think are worth noting in all of what's happening at the moment. The first of which is that the Iranian proposal that was sent to the United States, as far as I understand, was not actually requested by the United States. In other words, this is something that the Iranians have volunteered in order to try to change a current situation. If the Iranians were happy with the existing situation, with the way that things are going right now, I don't think that they would be coming up with proposals to end this conflict. I think that they would be playing a long game. I think they would be trying to stretch it out as much as possible. I think the Iranians are very good at playing for time, stretching things out, tiring the opposition out. We are told that the Iranians are masterful negotiators, and one of the tactics that they like to use is stretching things out in order to tire the opposition team out and potentially get what it is that they're wanting. But that's not what they're doing right now. They are coming up with a proposal. They have come up with a proposal, and they've sent it through the Pakistanis to the United States. President Trump has already said he doesn't like it. But it's a pretty serious proposal. And what I mean is that that this proposal does actually even address the issue of Iran's nuclear aspirations, even though the first stage doesn't address anything about their nuclear program. The first stage says stop the war and clear the Straits of Hormuz. That's essentially what they have proposed in the first stage of the agreement. Then the second stage says, let's enter into an agreement about Iran's nuclear program, potentially putting a freeze on nuclear enrichment for a period of 15 years, thereafter potentially allowing Iran to enrich uranium up to levels which are below the grade that's required for nuclear weapons. And then this third stage involves more of a regional approach to try to solve the regional conflict. So that was really the main context of the latest Iranian proposals. And it's interesting, of course, that for them, stage one has to be stop the war and open the Straits of Hormuz. That seems to be what's really pressing for them right now, the most urgent things. And of course, they've put those in stage one, even though the United States has said under no circumstances will it be willing to do any of that until the issue of the nuclear enrichment has been resolved. The Iranians have relegated that issue to stage two. But I think it's a relatively serious proposal which reflects the Iranians' priorities and also seeks in some way to address things that they know the United States will be seeking. President Trump said it's not enough. And I think the reason that it's not enough is that if he has to release his stranglehold on the Straits of Hormuz and on the blockade of the Straits of Hormuz, then potentially the second stage will never happen. And by the way, we're sort of seeing that in Gaza right now, where the first stage was stop the war. The second stage was disarm Hamas. Hamas has now said, we are not going to be disarmed. So the second stage in Gaza is already falling over, and we all predicted that it was likely to fall over. And in the same way, one could predict that the second stage of this Iranian proposal might fall over, because once the Straits of Hormuz are open and once the war is stopped, then coming to an agreement on the nuclear program is a completely different business, and you have different levers in your hand in order to make that happen. So I can see why President Trump has said no to that. And in the meantime, what he's also said is that he's going to help guide ships out of the Gulf of Arabia, out of that area where they are blockaded right now. He's going to help ships which are innocent, which are not involved, which belong to countries which are not involved in the conflict. And he's termed this as a humanitarian gesture because he has presented it as being where these ships are effectively running out of supplies. The sailors that are on these ships are running out of things that they need and that they need somebody to come and help them in order to rescue them from what is turning out to be a very, very difficult humanitarian situation. He has said that he hasn't used the word that he will allow the ships through or that he will force it anyway. He's used the term very carefully, and he said, we will guide these ships out. Now, what this guidance might involve is not clear, and whether that potentially involves even military activity if the Iranians attempt to block their attempts to guide these ships out. But clearly, this is just another potential clash point between the US and Iran. Lots of speculation about whether the Iranians are doing okay at the moment, whether this blockade is hurting them, whether they could potentially run for many, many more months like this without this situation really bothering them. But my reading of the situation is that because the Iranians have really made a massive effort to come up with a proposal which could potentially be considered as serious and which the United States might take seriously in looking at as a potential a blueprint for moving forward, I think that they are suffering. I think that they do want to move things forward. I think that they do want to get out of this stranglehold that they're in right now. I think economically they're being hurt very, very badly. And that could potentially have a major knock-on impact in Iran and potentially, from an internal perspective, might ignite some internal uprising. So my reading is that it's not I think that the levers right now are with the United States, that the Iranians are suffering, that they do want to make a difference to the situation. I don't agree with those commentators, and there are a number of them who have said, this is really something that the Iranians could tolerate for any length of time. I'm not sure that I agree with that particular view.
And the other question, of course, is what's happening with the enriched uranium?
Well, that particular point I didn't see being addressed.
Because I didn't either, and I kept looking for it, and I didn't see it anywhere in these reports.
We understand that Iran is in possession of a few hundred kilograms of enriched uranium. I was sort of wondering to myself whether this trip that the Iranian foreign minister undertook last week, where he went from Pakistan to Oman, back to Pakistan to Russia, I wondered to myself quietly, and I'm sharing this with you now, of course, whether he wasn't actually traveling with that enriched uranium or potentially finding a location, Russia, for example, which might take the enriched uranium from him. I don't know whether he could actually travel with it and give it to them or whether some sort of another arrangement might need to be made. But I was wondering whether that enriched uranium might not already have left Iran and be deposited somewhere safe to get it out of the way. I don't know. It's just my speculation.
Let's just talk about these two people who were detained from the flotillas. They were brought to Israel. What is the latest here?
So we didn't have a chance to talk about the flotilla last week, the latest flotilla, which involved more than 100 vessels and potentially more than 1,000 activists. And let me just first, just give acknowledgement to the way in which the IDF dealt with this. This flotilla was intercepted thousands of kilometers off Israel's coast, away from coast, in fact, not even near to Israeli territorial waters. And this comes from lessons that were learned from the Mavi Marmara and from other flotillas, where Israel understood that the closer to Israel's coast these flotillas come, the more dangerous and the more potentially explosive they might be. We saw the pictures of Greta Thunberg coming to Israel, eating sandwiches and then being deported, and all of that didn't really help Israel's public relations. But this time around, and with the cooperation of the Greek authorities, and one has to give acknowledgement, this flotilla was intercepted more than 1,000 kilometers away from Israel. Most of the activists were shipped through Crete from Greece and were sent home, except for these two individuals who were brought back to Israel. And it's not by coincidence. These are two individuals who are clearly on the radar of the Israeli security authorities. And even though it was exposed that the flotilla was mostly condoms and drugs and no humanitarian aid was found anywhere near these flotillas, even though they were being billed as being humanitarian aid being brought to Gaza, there was no humanitarian aid, unless you consider drugs and condoms to be humanitarian aid. I'm not sure how anybody would feel about that. But these two individuals were plucked off a flotilla. They were not repatriated back to their homes through Crete like everybody else. They've been brought to Israel. There are lots of pictures of them shown in Israeli prison gear. They were brought before a court in order to extend their detention. They were brought for remand. The judge has said that the case that's being built against them, and a lot of the information is very, very secret and not being exposed publicly, but the case against them that the judge has seen justified them being detained for a little longer in order to get all the information together. So there is certainly something building here. The defense lawyers of these two individuals have argued that Israel has no jurisdiction over this particular case. These individuals were kidnapped from international waters, and there's no reason why they should have been brought to Israel. So that's all illegal, and that there are technical legal problems. But the Israeli judges said, at least for now, that they can be detained. I think it's going to be very fascinating to see what sort of a case is being brought against two individuals who are not in Israel, who are not in Israel, who are doing things outside of Israel, clearly detrimental to Israel's security, and whether or not the Israeli courts have the ability and have the jurisdiction to build a case against these two individuals and to potentially charge them with security-related offences. I think it's a very fascinating situation.
It absolutely is. I know we've only got a minute left, but I do want to find out what is happening in Meron with regard to Lag BaOmer, because there seems to be confusion and potentially building anger. What's the latest?
Yeah, so tonight will be Lag BaOmer. We will celebrate Lag BaOmer tonight and tomorrow, the 33rd day of the counting of the Omer. And of course, there's lots of significance around Lag BaOmer, and also Rabbi Bar Yochai, who is buried on Mount Meron and whose anniversary it is of his death. And as a result of that, many tens of thousands and even hundreds of thousands of people usually turn up on Mount Meron, on Lag BaOmer, for that particular purpose, and there are traditions that are observed within the ultra-Orthodox community surrounding Mount Meron. We also know that a few years ago there was a disaster in Mount Meron where people were killed as a result of the infrastructure not being strong enough to cope with the number of people who were there. The government has said no Mount Meron this year. Full stop. That's it. No activities on Mount Meron. There is a war going on. There is danger from the north. There are still missiles that are being fired from Lebanon every single day. Mount Meron is certainly within easy firing distance from Lebanon. So no Mount Meron. There's no security that is available there. This is danger to life and limb. Nobody should go to Mount Meron. And yet there are people who have said, well, you know, we rely on God's protection. And we're not worried about whether the IDF can protect us or not. We're relying on God. Interestingly, the Sephardi chief rabbi, Rav Yosef, has come out saying people who do that are being negligent, and that is forbidden. That's the word that he used, forbidden for people to go to Mount Meron.
Okay, so
and yet
that's
we're
important.
Expecting that there are going to be people who are going to try and turn up there. We'll see tomorrow. Let's talk more about it and see what happens overnight and tomorrow.
That's where we leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, it is 8:01. Anthony Reich will be back tomorrow morning, 7:45, for the Israel Report.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.